The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
How are you feeling? What's in the room? What's here? Content. Second for content. What else? Oh yes, I can repeat them, but yes, grab. You can grab a mic, that's even better.
I have an aversion to leaf blowers. I wish everybody would go back to brooms. I think Atherton has a ordinance about it. And there was a leaf blower man over here, and it's so windy, and he's just blowing them all in the street. Mm. And the cars are going by, and they don't pick up the leaves. They just blow them into the street.
Yeah.
And it's hard for me to. That's a real trigger for me. Mm. And I think I'm going to wring that guy's neck. And of course, that's the exactly wrong thing to do. Yeah. And I feel like confronting these guys sometimes. And I feel like when I watch them, then they do something a little different. But if nobody's watching, they're just blowing them right in the street. Yeah. I know it's just a silly thing.
So thank you for sharing that. So a couple of things come up. I so appreciate you sharing that. One is the first thought that comes up for me, actually multiple thoughts. One is, I'm sorry, because it feels like you're really suffering. I can feel the contractions, like, ouch, that sounds really painful. Whew, ouch. That's one feeling that comes up. And another one that comes up is, I'm happy you get the chance to practice with this, because it's somewhat non-consequential. It's actually non-consequential, right? So the fact that this is happening, and it's one of your triggers, on the day you're contemplating and imbuing your mind with equanimity, sounds to me like the perfect juxtaposition. Like, thank you, universe. This is a practical joke. And it's perfect, right? It's kind of perfect to be seeing that, because, you know, I don't necessarily love the sounds of those blower and happens where I live too, in Slough, especially sometimes when I want to rest. And it's become a practice to just work with it, right? And not to suffer through it. I want to save my suffering for more important things, right? And so another story that reminds me of, I heard this from, I think, Bikwanalio, who's the person who told the story, was, and I think this is when he was a young monk studying with another teacher, and I forget the name of that teacher. I forget who it was. But anyway, so they're all the monks are sitting in the monastery for their afternoon practice period, and there is this, not leaf blower, but similar, a grass cutter, a mower, loud mower outside, and a person is mowing throughout the session. And after that day, the monks go to the head monk, say, you know, you have to ask him to stop doing that right outside the hall, the meditation hall. It's really, really disturbing. You were here to meditate. It's messing with our meditation, and how dare he? And anyway, they were up in arms, really hurting, right? So the head of the monastery goes to the person taking care of the grass, saying, great, what time were you doing? And the person says, you know, at this time, says, great, from today on, every day, I want you to come back at that exact time and take care of the grass. And if there's no grass still, I want you to take care, to make the noise, so that these practitioners get to practice with this, learn to practice with this. I passed, I asked the guy to come blow the leaves. I knew. I'm just joking, but I hope this supports you.
Sometimes I can't actually be with it. I can.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's harder for me.
And I so appreciate, and it's the same with all of us, right? Sometimes we're more resourced and it's easier. And sometimes we have less resources. And can the practice be such that less resources are needed so that we can deal with bigger and bigger waves in the ocean? And I so appreciate you speaking out about it so that we... And, you know, there is no shame, there is no difficulty. The mind has its own way of picking something up and being really upset about it. And in that story, I wanted to demonstrate you're not alone, of course. Like, there are many, many monks who are really upset about this noise also. And also to be kind with yourself, you know, just have compassion when... you realize you're up in arms and upset and angry and want to go and strangle the person. Yeah. Thank you. What else is in the room? Yeah.
Just to add on, there's a leaf blower in my area too, and what I try to use is Rumi's response to noise. He said, go out into the noisy street and become the noise.
Mm. Nice. Yeah, I like that. Yeah. I just thought about something else also, which is practicing loving kindness for oneself and for the person who's doing it, because it's much louder for the person who's doing it and much more unpleasant in a way. But still, the ear protection, when you're that close to it, the sound waves, it's affecting them a lot more. They have to do it for whatever reason, their livelihood. So, that's a lot that's in the room. Are you raising your hand, Mitra?
I was wondering if we can talk a little bit about... indifference.
Yeah.
And how to notice that I think I'm starting to notice when it's indifference, not equanimity. But anything you can add.
Great.
To how to practice against going there.
Practice with, okay, I appreciate the question. Let me ask you what you're starting to kind of notice a little bit, if it's possible to verbalize kind of what's coming up for you.
I think for a long, long part of my life, I was just too attached and severely, like, too upset about things and just over-involved.
Yeah.
And that was just creating so much suffering. So I think I finally realized this is not the way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But and it did look like I'm becoming more equanimous with things, but I think it wasn't even that. I think it was more that I was more indifferent than equanimous.
Right. Yeah.
I guess to save myself, maybe, for doing so much up and down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I so appreciate you talking about kind of noticing. At first being so attached in a way, so entangled, that's a better word, so entangled, and then disentangling. Really, I think that's the... So as a pointer, pointing to your experience, I want to point to the feeling in the body that comes up. When you feel you're entangled, what feeling comes up? Is there a contraction? Ooh, let that be your guide. Okay, so that's the guide for being too entangled. And then see when, for your self-preservation, realizing, oh, this is not the way to be, dear one. This is too difficult, letting go, unentangling. Okay. Feel the energy in that. And then notice, and this could take a little more paying attention. Notice if now the energy is one of closing down again in a different way, or if the energy is turning away, or if the energy is standing with it, holding witness, and having the stability of yourself. They have very different energies. You feel into it? So let that be your guide. Whenever something arises in your life and you're wondering, am I being indifferent? Am I being unentangled? Am I being equanimous? Am I turning away? Feel into the energy in your body. What does it feel like? And your body will tell you.
Yeah, even with indifference, the feeling isn't that great. Yeah. Because there is just pushing away.
Yeah.
It's the other end of the, I think it's just the opposite end of what I was doing before.
Yeah, that, yes. And you can feel it, right? You, I know you can. I can see it as you're exploring. Yeah.
Okay.
Great. Thank you for raising that. Yeah. Anything else? Any questions or reflections from this morning? Please.
You're going to get into it, but about being aware of karma, and everyone has their own karma, and how that relates to, it can appear to be almost indifference. Sometimes I've been places where people are really into karma, and they go, oh, that's their karma, you know, like that type of thing. But like, you know, deeply reflecting like that certain, you know, that there is karma, and that certain things are going to happen, a cause and effect, and that's the way it is type of thing. And, you know, that, I guess sometimes that can really, I mean, also, people might think you're indifferent or something, but you might be reflecting like that. Or I can't say for anybody else, but when I have observed it, sometimes I thought, oh, it seems quite indifferent, you know.
Right.
But that perhaps they were just like really looking at it in a very deep way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I appreciate the question, especially trying to link or understand the relationship between karma. The teaching on karma in this tradition, different traditions of different teachings on karma, but this tradition, and how it relates to equanimity. And also I brought in the traditional equanimity phrase, which is all beings are heir to their own karma, inherit the results of their own actions. Their happiness or unhappiness depends on their own actions, not on my wishes for them. That's kind of the long, wordy, classical equanimity practice. And some people really like that. And sometimes it's really appropriate, really appropriate. But there is a right understanding for the karma in order not to fall into indifference. And in a way, actually, I've evoked it all along today without calling it out by its name. When I talked about equanimity as a bird's eye view of seeing all the causes and conditions of everything that has come, everything that will be in terms of time, space, people, and so many different factors, that is the perspective of karma. Karma is cause and effect. That's exactly it. Now, the way I would not apply the teaching of karma and would not be helpful to apply the teaching of karma is when people say, oh, it's just their karma. It's kind of like brushing it aside. It's like, it's like it's their fault, or it's like that. That's dismissive, and it's kind of pushing it away. I don't think it's helpful to apply the teachings of karma retroactively. Like, oh, what did they do, or what did I do to end up in this mess? Or it's not helpful. Don't go there. Don't go there. The way I think the teaching of karma can be very helpful and actually empowering is how one thing is acknowledging that there are a lot of causes and conditions. Our doing, our actions is just one of them. So acknowledging the mystery of the global interconnectivity of all of us and nature. So that is one way, just to acknowledge that and not to try to assign blame or assign responsibility. So step one is to acknowledge that. And then the empowering aspect of it can be that whatever I do or think, behave in this moment, in terms of personal empowerment, whatever I do in this moment, it conditions the next moments of my volition and thought and proclivities. So that is empowering. That's really empowering. And that also is along the research in neuroscience and psychology, that basically whatever you do, or the more you think a particular way, the more you act a particular way, that becomes the habit of your mind. And neurons that fire together, wire together, blah, 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 there are so many, things. So, but it's along those lines, right? How the way you choose to work with, say, the sound of the leaf blower in this moment, right? Or whatever it is, that conditions the next moment that something like this comes up, something troubling, something difficult, a noise in the world, conditions you in that way. So that's a teaching of karma, cause and effect, empowerment. So that's the way I would say both karma relates to equanimity, and also is the way to hold it without falling into indifference or actually aversion. Kate. Speaking of noise, we have some deep bass. Great. Wonderful. Let's enjoy it.
While we're talking about karma, I have added a little bit to the phrase about my loved one's happiness depends on their actions.
Right.
In working with children, it can also, and young adults, it can also be helpful to point out that one's actions can include one's inactions as well.
Yeah, right.
In terms of working with those who tend to procrastinate. So your happiness depends on your actions and inactions.
Yeah, appreciate that. And also, as you brought up the this tends to be very helpful when we're working with others, especially, of course, right? And I know that this phrase both can be really helpful for some and very triggering for some. So if it's helpful to work with, please pick it up, whoever, whenever. If it's not, leave it. Yeah. Don't have to work with it at all and get entangled. Yeah, thank you. Any other reflections? Yeah.
Back to this indifference motif. You know, when you talk about the leaf blower, what troubles me, not, I don't get too reactive, but you know, the thing of no problem, everybody, you know, no problem, it's no problem. I mean, it becomes so meaningless in some ways, mm-hmm. and it's become a cultural, I don't know what the word would be, but, you know, everybody does it, you know, mm-hmm. everybody mm-hmm. does it. And the same thing with it is what it is. You know, my one of my doctors was going through some stuff and I was trying to be compassionate or whatever. Mm. You know, and the answer from people often is that it is what it is. And that yeah. is kind of, it just cuts it off. Mm. It just cuts it off. So some of these phrases seem to me to be, has the component of indifference or has the component of closing something down.
Mm.
You know, when you say, it is what it is. Where do you go with that? you know, it yeah. is what it is. That right. is true. You know.
Right. Right.
So that's yeah. my comment.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
I know.
So I.
And most, a lot of those phrases are like that. You know. Let me see.
Which is why
it's
I
like
said.
This. Of course, it's like this. You know.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Of course, it's like this. But.
Yeah.
You know, he died, you know what I mean? But what I'm trying to say is that a lot of these platitudes
uh-huh.
are platitudes.
Yeah, yeah. I hear where you're going with that, and it's perfect. I am so glad you're bringing this
always
up.
Always glad.
I am.
And always appreciative.
I am. Because I see, I really see where you're going with that, and it's so helpful. I'm glad you're raising it instead of and having the courage to raise it, instead of just going home and fuming over it on your own. And also for the benefit of others, because I think this is a very important point. And in fact, these nuances, you know, it's easy, maybe not easy, but, you know, just reading the Dharma or just kind of like a broad brush is easier than really getting into these nooks and crannies and cruxes where there is the rub. So a couple of things I would say about this. One is what you're pointing out to is really not the phrases themselves, but really the spirit with which they are said and they're practiced. And that makes all the difference. I could say, like somebody says something, well, it is what it is, you know, I could say that, like, okay, that will definitely, no, hold on, I'm not done. That will definitely end the conversation. And there could also be an acknowledgement of, well, it is what it is. This is the way things are. Can I accept, can I be? So first I want to distinguish, but there is more. So at first I want to distinguish really the spirit with which these phrases are said, are practiced. And that's the first step. That's maybe the grosser step. And some of what you were saying was on the grosser level, but some of it is on the finer level that I'm going to get to in a moment. And also, so not only the way the phrases are said, but the way the phrases are received. That's the other thing. How are you receiving them when somebody says them? How are they received? And I will just leave this as a big question mark. Not only how they are said, but also how they are received. Because maybe if a friend is saying, well, it is what it is, and their intention is like, oh, like, I'm sorry, and I acknowledge that it is what it is. And maybe the mind that hears that is like, well, where do I go from that? Maybe by putting a question mark next to that, saying, what did you mean? Are you trying to close the conversation? Like, that could be an opening instead of a closing. So I wouldn't just bring a final judgment this phrase is bad, this is how it's said, but I would bring a question mark to the whole exploration of all of it, the way it's said, the way it's perceived, the mind state, bring curiosity to it all instead of a judgment of that's what it is. Because a closed mind, when there is just a judgment has been made without a curiosity, there is no place to go. It's not a beginner's mind. It's done. There is no place for learning, for growth, for exploration. So that's another thing I'll bring in. The another aspect I like to bring in is that sometimes, please do notice if your practice of equanimity is veering into indifference or giving up or acquiescence. Please be aware of that. That's very important. And that can happen. That can definitely happen. It's very important. So please be aware of that. I'm not saying that, oh, every practice of equanimity is going to stay pure. No, that's why they're called the near enemies, because you need to watch out for them all the time. It's not like, oh, you hear it once and you're done and you're just going to practice equanimity happily ever after. No, watch out for it all the time. And then yet another layer I want to bring in is when there is a sense of true equanimity and peace of non-reactivity. I think that's another word I want to make equivalent in some ways to equanimity. Non-reactivity. There is more place for wisdom. There is more place to actually act out of wisdom. So, for example, I'm sorry, I'm going to come back to the example of leaf blower. It's a good one because it's blowing right now. It's perfect. So if there is this, it's blowing right now, if there's a sense of reactivity, it's like, oh, I just want to go and strangle this guy. Like, there's no wisdom, right? And if I say, and if I see the guy, as you were describing, just blowing into here and there and nether, you know, everywhere, and cars coming and going, maybe he doesn't even know how to do it. It's like, oh, it's all okay, it's all okay. Or maybe, perhaps, I don't know, maybe there is this place for equanimity. Like, okay, you're not bothered, but you see that he's not really being effective. He's not really being functional. And without hating him, hating what he's doing, hating the sound, kind of signaling with a smile, really with ease, because there's no reactivity, going saying, hey, you know, I just noticed while you're blowing this thing and the cars are coming, and you know, with friendliness, taking action. So it doesn't necessarily mean that equanimity means like it's all fine and you just accept and you roll over and show your belly. So there's a lot in what you're saying and the difference between equanimity and indifference and acquiescence. And I'll leave that, all of those, for as exercises for the practitioners. We all have to find our own ways.
It was more coming from others that it's a program response, you know, not necessarily from. I mean, we're talking about people who are trying to be conscious and sensitive, et cetera, et cetera, and who study the Dharma or whatever. But I'm talking about the general public, where they pick up these phrases like "no problem" or "it is what it is." It's kind of pet phrases that don't have any. It just really cuts off feeling tone. That's all I can say.
It is what it is.
It is, yes. It is what it is. And yet, I think what I'm like tuning into is. What I'm also hearing for you as a practitioner, Marcia, how triggering that is.
Well, it's well, you know, on some level it is triggering, but it's just noticing the stereotypical way.
Do you want to grab the mic as you continue to talk?
Now, on some level it's triggering, but triggering.
Yeah.
But it's just noticing on some level how stereotypical the culture has become in terms of people expressing themselves.
I hear that. And yet, here in this context, where we're really exploring the nuances, why is it important for you to bring this in right now? That's what I would ask. And maybe you don't have an answer, but really sit with it. Why is it important for you to have that be a thing right now? Why is it? And again, I don't want to put you on the hot seat, but reflect on that, please. Yeah. Oh, yes, Kate has the next, and then Mitra. Yeah.
I've had that similar experience, and I know the friend was just didn't want me to feel bad. It was when my first brother-in-law had died, and my friend said to me, well, you know, we all die, yeah, yeah, yeah. And I just looked at him. He's a really old friend, almost like a brother. I just looked at him, and I said, I know that. And right now, I miss my brother-in-law. And I could say that with even a slight tinge of hostility with this friend, and it wasn't going to, you know, cause a problem. But I, with other people, I might say, you know, I know that. But right now, it's just hard. And they would understand that.
Yeah.
And if I were saying it to somebody, it is what it is, I would try to say, I know what it is, that it is like it is. There is what it is.
Yeah.
And I know it's hard right now, and I'm sorry about that.
I'm hearing so many nuances.
It's the tone,
history, it's the, you know, they don't want you to hurt.
Or maybe
they can't hold their own hurt because you're hurting. They want to make it better for you because they're hurting. They care about you. It's an old friend. It's all those complexities, and it's the sensitive space you're in. Like, well, of course I know. Come on, I'm not a kid, you know. Like, there are all these nuances.
Oh,
my goodness.
My mother used to say to me when I was a child and some friend wasn't being my friend anymore or something, oh, when one door closes, another opens. And I just always felt frustrated by that. If she could have worded that a little bit differently instead of, it came off to me as that she couldn't handle my feelings. And in fact, of course, it is true that when one door closes, another opens. He's right here. but it is how it's said, and making the allowances that somebody is not going to feel.
And here's
great
actually,
right now.
So I want to bring this now back full circle, back to practice of equanimity, right? Because when we can have the spaciousness, when we have the stability, and someone says this, so says something that maybe at first there's an ouch, right? We can turn back and give them another ouch, or say, ah, that's what's happening right now. Okay, can I be non-reactive and act with wisdom in this situation? So it kind of comes, I want to infuse the theme for today. Yeah. And Mitra, you had your hand.
I actually had the same, another example.
Another example.
Very similar.
Yes, I mean, I'm just going along with that. I can feel that sadness. If it's like whenever you're not met, you know, like there's, you know, you're there and then somebody's like not quite willing or able at that moment or seeing that they can go there. And so then but they know they should say like a Hallmark card. They want to read some of those things.
And they're doing their best. They're doing their best.
And then I guess on the other side, you know, I'm thinking when I kind of do those things too, I talked about my daughter a bit with our little group, but, you know, I reflect on her karma a lot because I get overwhelmed, and so I reflect that I'm doing my best, and I know everybody has their own karma, and I can't, you know, what her actions or inactions, and I know that it will all have results, and, you know, it's very difficult for me because I have to I feel like I just sit there, and I'm like, okay, you have to let go of this because this is your stuff. You know, and then sometimes I will say, you know, whatever you do or don't do, it will have an effect. So as long as you're willing to go along with what we think this effect might be, you're not doing any of your homework or whatever, you know, type thing.
Right,
whatever,
right.
If you're willing to go along with that, then I think that will be fine. That's what I try my best to say that, you know. And then sometimes she'll say, like, oh, don't go all Buddhist on me. You can't win. You know what I mean? You're trying right. so hard. Like,
well, it's so
oh, okay, I'll let go of that. Oh,
yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, so yeah. I'm just saying that it's really hard to do this, I think. Mm-hmm. I mean, to really be present and when someone is suffering and perhaps... I mean, a person is going into their own suffering of all their own losses or whatever. Yeah. You know what I mean? And and so then they say something. It's like,
right.
you know.
Exactly.
And we want kind of a script to help us, but there isn't anything. Right. It's and if we make a mistake,
right.
you know, it's like part of life. You know, it's part of the whole process. It's like we don't have a script. We're just trying.
Right. I so appreciate you bringing up the two sides of the coin for every time that you know someone has tried their best but said something that maybe was just inappropriate for you at that moment. Probably for as many times you or we, you know, because the other side of the coin, one has done their best and said something that in that moment was not appropriate for someone or didn't meet
exactly.
them. And so just seeing that, like we're all in this boat together for every time, you know, they've said it is what it is. Maybe you said it is what in a way that what didn't quite meet it. Just to see that, it's like, the humanity of all of us doing our best, the best we can.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's not appropriate.
It just doesn't work.
It just doesn't work.
Or it doesn't work.
Right. Yeah. So the other thing I want to say, and then I want to switch, is wanting a script. And there is no script, especially when somebody is suffering and in difficulty. And maybe the best we really can do, the best script is... offering our full attention and presence and not trying to make the pain go away and just being with whatever is. Being with whatever is. And that's the what I've experienced and also heard from others, especially towards the end of life when it's really intense with people passing or grief, is just to hold a compassionate presence. And let the person be your guide as to where the conversation needs to go or not need to go. Maybe just silence is all you need to hold. So that's the best quote-unquote script I know, which is a no script, is just offering your full presence and being responsive and having whatever appropriate response the situation calls for, not coming with a preconceived notion of putting this on, but just being open to whatever is called for, which may be nothing.
This topic, I've sat through, this is part of Seven Factors of Awakening before and part of the Brahma Viharas, and it always is the one that you could just sense the energy in the room that everybody is having to deal with equanimity.
Yeah.
As you say, the common humanity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right, exactly. That's right, because it comes up all the time, every day, every moment. Like, we just had so many examples from what, you know, just teaching you, sitting up here, sitting in the room, like, there's so much equanimity to even sit here and hear the teachings and speak and pull back and pull forward. Just being non-reactive, right? In every moment. And these are kind of small waves, but sometimes there are bigger waves in our lives.
In groups, small groups, you were dealing with the structure of the day.
Right.
You can sense.
Yeah, it's alive, hence the crown jewel of this practice.
Yes.
Yeah. Yay! What what a privilege to be able to spend the day really exploring this topic together and talking about it and feeling into it. So, what I'd like to suggest now is we change gears and we'll have a 5 minute stretch break, really 5 minutes, and we'll reorganize the room to be a circle, and we'll all sit in a circle and explore. There will be a short, maybe a half hour will take to explore the seven factors together. Any reflections you've had about them, what's been helpful? Well, actually, I'll say all that when we come back. Okay, 5 minute break and let's reorganize the room. And this. So I thought this would be a great opportunity for sharing some reflections, if you wish, about the whole series, what it's been like to practice the whole series or parts of the series or the part that were particularly your favorites or challenging or anything, or questions, reflections. So pretty much open. Would it be helpful to review what the factors were?
Yes.
We can do them together. The first one, sati, mindfulness. Second one, dhamma vichaya, investigation, curiosity. Third one, energy engagement, virya, effort. Now, I like to say the Pali first, just for consistency. So virya, engagement, effort. Yeah. And the fourth one, piti,
joy,
rapture. Fifth one, pasadi, tranquility, calm. Sixth one, samadhi, concentration, often translated as calm, steadiness of mind, unification of mind, what I like more, collectedness of mind, a mouthful. And number seven, upekkha, equanimity. Whew. Quite a rich seven. And I think I'll just say one more thing. My hope really throughout the series has been both to get us to impart a sense that these seven factors are not so far away from your human everyday experience. You've tasted them. You know what they are. You've had many experiences of them, and to know that there's many ways they can be nuanced, and their nuances can be cultivated more, both in your daily life and on the cushion during your practice. So it's not just about practicing on the cushion with these, and it's lovely when they arise, of course, on the cushion when you're practicing and you're held in them. And you can experience more and more of them in daily life. So, I'd like to pass the baton to any questions, reflections about today, about the whole series, any part of it. Especially if you haven't spoken much today, I'd like to ask you to lean forward.
I just want to say that to me, sati, just realizing that it's the importance of that, and then I feel like without that, there's nothing. I mean, obviously there's nothing without that, but it's just, you know, none of the other ones, there wouldn't be. We wouldn't, just that to me is a lot.
Nice. I so appreciate what you said, because it's so true. And I think there's a reason why that's number one. Yeah. Yeah. great reflection.
I think for me, joy was the kingdom. Because, you know, as I read more and more, it seems to be what the teachings are saying, is that without joy, there is no freedom. That is,
is it on?
I don't think so.
It's not.
Okay. So I was saying the joy for me was sort of like the kingpin, because from the readings and from what understanding is happening, it seems that joy, without joy, there is no path to liberation, mm-hmm. and that's a key factor in the transformational process. And historically and genetically and all those other things, all my karma, joy was not programmed into my family life. And so it's been I think that's been one of the more difficult qualities to access and work on. And this class has been very helpful in you know, just noticing. I mean, I think I've said this before, is that joy can be there in every single moment. Mm-hmm. It's just seeing the whatever it is, the beauty, the wonder, or the magic of each moment. That A, you can see it, you can hear it, you know, whatever it is, but just to notice it. And so I've been working on that component a lot. Because, as I say, it seems that unless that one is accessed, it's really hard to move on the path. And what you can comment about that would be helpful.
Yes.
It's the shortest response you can give.
I just have to leave it at that then. And not expand. So it will stay the shortest. But so okay, it's not like me to give shit. But since you asked for a reflection,
I just never realized that joy was even a part of the path and how important it was.
Yeah,
you know, mindfulness, equanimity, all the other ones were accessible, but joy was.
Yeah. And you know, Marcia, it's really, it delights me, really. It gives me a lot of joy to hear you share that reflection. Because if there's only one thing, and it's that is the thing that came out of this seven-month series for you, yay. That is fantastic and so significant. So significant. It makes me so happy. And as you've said, joy is important. It's so important that it is one of the seven factors. There's so many factors, you know, the Buddha could have crammed into the seven. He's chosen the seven, and joy is one of them. Piti. It's so. And may you continue to turn your mind to it and see all the joys you were describing in the simplicity of the present moment. It's everywhere. It's here. It's right. It's us. It's us. It's present right here. Just have to open my peripheral vision to it. And it's just, there's a lot of delight and joy and happiness right here, together with everything else that can be. But it's just like, wow, the sense of awe, amazement, delight, like, wow, at being alive even. Maybe we'll just leave it on from now.
Yeah. The thing about joy is even in the sorrows,
mm-hmm.
with the bigger picture,
there
is that component of knowing you're alive,
mm-hmm.
you know, that life, nature, whatever you want to call that energy, even with all, whatever the worst can be, that if I'm able to tap into the source, mm-hmm. It's not that it makes everything okay, but it makes everything okay.
Yeah. It's interesting. As you say this, I'll say this last thing for letting someone else have a reflection. Is this sense of, you know, piti, the sense of joy, this effervescent delight, also translated as rapture, is, you know, when I think of the energy of being, as you turn, you say, you turn, you know, turning one's mind, even in the midst of the worst difficulty, but just being aware, that sense of consciousness, that energetic level of being, that has energy of piti, joy, delight. It's like, it's there. It's kind of like that effervescence. Yeah, thank you. Lovely. What else? Please, Kate.
In the discussion of virya, or effort, energy, I appreciated the definition of, or the translation of effort as gentle perseverance. Mm-hmm. And that could help reduce the judgment of you're too much, you're too energetic, or you're not putting in enough effort, the self-judgments and judgments of others.
It
makes the exploration less personal by eliminating the negative self-talk, which is great.
Nice. Thank you. Thanks for bringing that in. Yeah, like gentle perseverance. I think I coined that. Yeah, virya. Thank you. Other reflections?
I don't know if it was intentionally planned, but I thought it was interesting the way the first three or four were Saturdays with a much bigger group, and then these last were Fridays.
More cozy. Yeah.
Was that intentional?
Not in that way. It's just what days seem to be available, Saturdays or Sundays, and what days I was in town, I was available, IMC was available, so it was just the dance that we were doing with various calendars.
I'm wondering, back to equanimity, what would be an equanimous response to something like climate change or, you know, big thing like this, and deniers and something like this? You being a scientist, I wonder...
It's, I'm working on it. And I think it's, at times for me, it's accessible, and sometimes it's not. It's a work in progress. Trudy.
Thank you. I can see why equanimity is called the crown jewel. And I think it's... It contains so many of the others. Now, and this is, of course, from my vantage point, what I'm seeing, and other people see it differently. But I think I've been in quieter places during equanimity than maybe anything else. And so there is that sense of being mindful. There is a joy, not that I'm jumping into it now, but just experiencing the lack of attachment, clinging, aversion, and all of that, to me adds up to joy. And so I'm just always happy when the subject is equanimity. I'm there. Mm. It's just wonderful. So, and I'm grateful to the group and to Nikki for this experience. Each one is just a milestone of growth for me, moving each year into a new place. So, thank you all.
Thank you, Trini.
Yeah, here, here. I want to thank you for teaching the course. You know, you're an exceptional teacher, so I think we all know we're fortunate to get to study with you, especially in such a small group. So, one of my reflections is that it's interesting how, like lots of sciences, the Buddha has torn it all apart and put it back together for us, you know, and come up with terms. And in some ways, you know, I might think it's not necessary to break it all up and name all these things. But I think something I've seen more through this course is the value of having these things defined and to have these signposts. Because when I meditate, you know, the experience varies a lot depending on where I'm at, you know, mentally and things. And it's helpful on one hand when things aren't going smoothly to have an awareness of that's a known problem and there are tactics for those things and I can apply those tactics. And it's also when things are going really well, you know, there can be kind of an excitement or an attachment to one place that you're at, but it's helpful to know that it's, you know, part of a journey and where you are on the path. And so I've learned a lot through this course that's helped me in that way, given structure to what I'm trying to, what I'm experiencing. When I look at the seven factors, I have a question. Well, one other reflection is when I look at the, labeled the first four mm-hmm. as a group and the second three as a group, and the first four being ones that have, one was, more the calm, and one was more the energy.
Of the energizing factors,
yeah.
And the calming factors, and mindfulness as the balancing one.
Right, right.
So mindfulness is in the middle, like a seesaw.
Right.
That's in the middle. That's the balancing factor.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are the energizing ones and the calming ones.
Right. So kriya, so dhamma, vichaya, uh-huh. virya, and piti.
Yes,
the energizing ones.
Exactly.
Pasadi, Samadhi, and Upekka.
Are the calming ones.
Yeah. For me, there's a very natural progression from mindfulness through to PT. I recognize repeatedly that sequence,
mm-hmm.
Or kind of one flowing into the other. But the question I have is about Pasadi, which I started to ask you after the break, which is when we did our meditation this morning.
Yeah.
And I felt that kind of like still the mountain.
Yeah.
I associate that with Pasadi.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Okay. That was Pasadi.
Okay. And then because equanimity then is, you know, the culmination too, so to see the overview, to
right.
see everything without attachment
right.
or aversion, and
exactly, it's more mm-hmm. right, right. It's that kind of perspective.
Mm-hmm.
So the kayagatasati, the mindfulness of the body
mm-hmm.
supported us to have pasadi,
mm-hmm.
tranquility, calm,
yeah.
like mm-hmm. the body being really stable, and that by the way, supported samadhi because your mind became more stable. So now I'm pointing out how the last three kind of roll into each other. And your mind became more stable.
Right.
And the stability could allow one to have more, not non-aversive, non-reactive mind. Non-jump, you know, not attaching, not aversive. So non-reactivity. And then, so the only link that's missing now from all of them going into each other is from PT to Pasadi.
Right.
So PT, when PT kind of, when the joy, when the delight, it supports, and when it kind of evens out, that electrifying kind of joy of it, when it kind of evens out, there can be a sense of Pasadi, which is this calm, this this unwinding of the body. And the two are linked.
Thank you. I wanted to have a link there, and you helped me with that. Thank you.
Anytime. Anything else?
Well, it was both in this course and in the weekend that we did, you know, the eight principles, which I now have renamed the eight principles of samadhi. Sorry, Nikki. They were the eight principles of Nikki before.
No, they were the eight principles. Nikki's eight principles of samadhi.
Nikki's eight principles. I never got the of samadhi. Like, I didn't realize it was specific to samadhi.
Yeah, right. Well, the whole the two-day retreat you're talking about was about samadhi. So.
Yeah.
So sorry I wasn't.
If I don't know if everybody was here, but you know, it was relax, receive, enjoy, seclusion, surrender, curiosity, interest, gentle persistence, attitude. Those are like really helpful and really interesting to kind of play around with. Seem pretty intertwined with the seven factors of liberation. So they might be principles that are helpful for samadhi, but they're also quite helpful for whatever we call not samadhi, Theravada.
Yeah. So one thing I can say about that, it seems like there are some things that, and I've taught, when I taught the day long here on samadhi, I guess last month was samadhi here. I did mention the eight. So, and some confusion that can come up is, oh yeah, some of the eight seem to be part of the seven factors, etc. So just to say, the eight that I chose are what are very supportive for cultivating samadhi, really, really supportive. And yes, some of them seem to be show up on the seven factors, some not. But also, that's something that's kind of interesting. I hadn't quite, until you pointed out, thought about it. But there's so many lists that the Buddha has, so many lists, and some things show up on same list. Some things don't show up, and it's kind of like each list is a little different. There's specificity, so there is a reason why. And I can go over the reasons why some things are on there, some things are not on there. But it's like, oh yeah, I've always wondered why Buddha has something showing up on some lists and not, like, why is he so inconsistent? And now I'm being inconsistent, but not really. Without going into more detail, yeah. It makes sense, and I can discuss it more.
They're all resources.
Right. Right. Yeah. Let's just leave it at that. Yeah. Thank you, Daryl. Thank you. I'm delighted. It's been nourishing for you. Any other reflections, please? Rob.
I've really enjoyed the kind of the linking together of all the ideas and as you were just discussing, you know, just how they all relate to each other in an intellectual sense. But what I appreciated even more about the Course was that it integrated emotionally for me, that there was a natural emotional progression for these different states of being. And that's probably my biggest takeaway from the class, is that these things all fit together emotionally as well for me.
Nice.
And so it just been really wonderful in that way. I will say that I come from a little bit different eclectic background, and when it comes to dealing with things as they are, I always think about the universe conspiring to produce each moment. It's pretty neutral.
Right.
Because that's what happens.
Right.
The universe just conspires to produce each moment. And I think it's easier for us to notice the things that we don't like about it. But from a past study of being a Stoic, I know to stick my finger in the wound, if you will, and to find out why I'm uncomfortable with it, to be curious about it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it generates energy and it goes it goes on, you know, until I find a way of being at peace with it.
Right.
What's harder is to take in the good.
Mm-hmm.
And to be present and make that part of your life, and it nourishes the happiness and joy side of me.
Yeah, a second vote for joy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Indeed.
Great. Lovely.
And that really supports the equanimity. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. And I think we have just one person. If you'd like to share anything, you don't have to. You can pass, but
I want to thank you as well. I think you're a wonderful teacher, and I learned a lot. And I appreciate everyone in the group because you there's a lot of depth here, a lot of practice, and you can kind of really feel it when you sit down, and also when you share. So I feel like I can have perspectives. I never get a chance to say any of these things to anybody else. So I really appreciate that. And I think for me, unfortunately, I didn't go to all the sessions, but I would say that samadhi, I must say, I didn't really think it would be one that would draw me the most, but I did really appreciate that. And I felt I know I have had kind of a longing to have samadhi, you know, but I also know that that can work against samadhi. So, but I felt on our day, I felt kind of a natural landing or whatever, not landing, but being part of that. And so I really appreciated that because it was just natural, kind of, you know. I think that's it. Yeah.
Nice.
Thank you, though.
Thank you. Thank you all. Yeah, one more reflection, one last reflection.
The other one for me was energy.
Because
when I started, I think I might have said it, I was embroiled in sloth and torpor. I mean, it was sort of like a blanket around me. And something changed, I don't know, a couple of months ago, where the energy started to flow and there was a kind of a commitment to and a direction and a focus. And it was just it was a semi-dramatic change. And, you know, I can't say exactly what the turning point was, but I can see now in my practice and in my activities there's a pleasure in it and an effort. That thing somebody said, relaxed effort. So, you know, whatever you did, it really is very, very helpful, this change in the energy, even though sloth and torpor is very comforting.
Mm. Yay. It makes me happy. It's yeah. Yay. So I want to thank you all. I want to thank you all for your practice, for, you know, we've practiced together for many months with reflections, and I've also been practicing, and, you know, the handouts, especially I think from the middle on, I would put them up ever since, I think Daryl said he was putting them up in his bathroom by the mirror. I did the same, and I would be reflecting. So it's been really sweet practicing together. I appreciate all your practice, all your reflections, all your wisdom. And and sitting especially together and for me to hear how in some ways transformative it's been, the various teachings for you. It makes me really, really happy. That's the biggest reward for me for sharing the teachings. I want to thank you for all your practice. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you. Let's dedicate the merit of all of our practice. Let me grab the bell. May the merit of our practice together today, over the past 7 months of practicing together in community, on our own, at home, with these reflections, with these seven factors of awakening, may it percolate through the world, this goodness. May it be a cause and condition for joy, happiness, freedom, goodness, for all beings everywhere, including ourselves. May all beings be happy. May all beings be free. Thank you all. Thank you. Wait it.